Yeah, there's a lot of choices when we look at life. They're listed here in the start. You can look at the world as an atheist, as an agnostic, or as a deist. The terms aren't important. An atheist is someone who is convinced there definitely is no God. A deist is a person who is convinced there is a God. And an agnostic is the person in the middle. They just don't know. If you believe there is a God, there are dozens of possibilities as to how you can approach and believe that there is God. The major ones in our part of the world would be those who believe in the God of Abraham. And if you believe in the God of Abraham, you can be Jewish. If you believe that Jesus is God, believing in the God of Abraham, you'll be Christian. If you believe that Jesus was great and that Muhammad is the greatest of the prophets, believing in the God of Abraham, then you'll end up, I have Muslim here, but it's really a member of the Islam faith. Should you believe that Jesus is God, the major classifications that others use to show how you could understand to try to live the life of Jesus would be Catholic, Orthodox, or one of what many people lump together under the term the Protestant churches. Now, some who believe that Jesus is Lord and are not Catholic by their own understanding of the word or Orthodox violently object to be included under the term Protestant. It's not really important. Not that their view, I mean how we categorize them. What I'm just trying to show is at this moment, there's a bewildering variety of how you're going to live the life of God. There are an awful lot of choices, and I want you to really decide to see how crucial it is that you make a choice. First, with everything that exists, with all things, you and I share existence. We are. This chair exists and I exist and I know that. With all life, but I'll put it with the plant life, we share basic drives. This is a level coming up in existence now. Everything material exists. Plants have life. From this level on, we have life. The basic root of this, the most fundamental way, would be the plants themselves. Plants have drives. They have a need for air, and you and I do. They have a need for food, and we have a drive, a need for food. They have a need for water, and we have a need for water. They have a need to reproduce themselves, and we share the same type of basic drives. On above this, and while this may sound elementary, there's a very important point on this next one. With all animals, we share emotions. And this becomes important for religion. I had two toy fox terriers, and they can go through almost every emotion that I experienced, just as far as I can tell by looking at them. One of them was very high-strung as a pup. If I yelled at her, well, if I slapped her, she was depressed for a whole day. I could do everything I could to try to get her out of that depression, but that dog was going to stay in a pretty deep depression for most of a day. I've seen dogs, well, she's jealous as anything. Let another dog come near me and she's on my lap in 2 seconds. She can be happy, I can spot that. This is very important, that our emotional life is something we share with animals. But we and we alone have reason and will. Now, as far as I can tell, this is what distinguishes us and makes us unique. As far as I can tell, my dogs are incapable of asking themselves, what is life all about? They can't ask the most basic question. They just live. They react. They can't really ask themselves, what's the purpose of being a dog? And am I being a good dog? And is this the way a dog should live? One reason I want to show that this is what makes us unique is, first, if you can go back to the level of the animal. Most people, in many ways, put religion on the level that we share with the dogs and the pigs, on the level of feeling. If there's a certain feeling that's supposed to be holy, and if you have this feeling, then you're being good, and if you don't have it, then you're not being good. And I'd just like to point out right away that a God who gives us a unique dignity isn't likely to set his way of relating with us on that level that we share with the dogs and the pigs. Religion is not basically a matter of our emotions, even though being emotional, we're often going to tend to try to make it that. Religion begins with our mind and our will, with that which makes us unique. When I surrender my mind or my will, then I'm making myself just an animal. And for a long time, many people in the Catholic Church did this. They had the understanding that chief decisions, crucial decisions, should be made by the Pope or by the bishop or by the priest. They didn't understand. But I have absolutely no right to surrender that which makes me stand above the rest of creation, and you have no right to surrender that which makes you stand above the rest of creation to me or to anyone else. Your dignity, that which makes you stand above my dogs, your dignity, that which gives you a uniqueness that enables you to stand above the pigs of the world and the elephants and the hippopotami, is your ability to think. Your ability to think and to reach conclusions on your own. All A is included in B. C is part of A, therefore C is included in B. Like all elephants are animals. Dodo's an elephant, therefore Dodo's an animal. We can reason. We can think things through, and that's what makes us unique. It's unfortunate that we don't always live as a whole. We don't have to worry about our existence, but our drives can lead us one way. Our emotions can lead us another way, and our mind can lead us a third way. And this can set up a real battle and a struggle within us. There are other times when we can act as entire persons. There are days when you're just not going to feel holy, when you're going to feel down, when you're going to feel guilt. But with your mind, I hope you'll be able to reason through to the fact that in God's eyes, God's in love with you. And you have no cause for this feeling. They don't flow from the way God looks at you. They flow rather from your own view of looking at yourself. And you can then conclude that your feelings aren't supposed to run your life. Your mind is supposed to run your life. And you have the freedom to act contrary to your feelings. That's one of the great privileges. That's one of the great things that any man, any person, when I say man here, I'm talking as man as mankind, really should have. The ability to act independent of their feelings when the feelings aren't the things that are going to be best for them. Because our intellect, our ability to think things through and ask the basic questions is what gives us our unique dignity, I feel that every one of us have to approach the basic problems of life and ask some crucial questions about them. And we've got to reach our own decisions. And you may reach a decision that the best way for you to live is to live with God loving you, and that this love of God for you is Jesus himself, and the best way for you to experience this love is in the Catholic Church. If you conclude that, if that's what your reason concludes, then I would hope that you would follow it up with your will. But in the course of the few evenings that we'll have together, you may conclude in hearing something, well, I can't agree with that. I really can't buy that. Your conclusion then would be that the best way for you to live God's love coming into your life as Jesus is not in the Catholic Church. If that's a conclusion you reach, please do not join the Catholic Church. Please follow your own conscience. Conscience being not your feelings. That's what a lot of people feel that conscience is. If that's it, then every dog has a conscience. My dog has a conscience that tells my dogs, that tell them they better not wet on the carpet inside. But that isn't what conscience is. Conscience is really my reason working, my mind thinking, and reaching conclusions that this is what I should be. This is how I, you know, this is what life is all about. This is how I should live it. Therefore, this is what I should do. Since God gave you this conscience as your unique dignity, your reason, this is what you got to follow. And we're not perfect. And we do reach different conclusions. All you have to do is walk within about a 5-block area here and look at the different Christian churches. And almost every one of them, oh, that's a terrible thing to say, every one of them are peopled by individuals who are trying to live love. It's just that their reasons are reaching slightly different conclusions. And we hold that every one of us must follow what our own conscience tells us. If we stay open to the Spirit of God, that Spirit, I believe, and I think most of us do, will eventually lead us to a unity. But until we have found that unity, I must walk the road that I feel God wants me to walk. Not that I feel, that I conclude, that I can reason to God wanting me to walk. Because of this, something that I shared with a few of you before we started. Should you stop coming and not call us with a reason, we're never going to contact you. We put no pressure on you. Because we'll conclude that somehow you've heard something that in your conscience, in your reason, you can't accept. And we respect God who gave you your mind and who has enough trust in your mind that we'll respect this. And so we don't doorbell ring to bring you back here. We don't phone to bring you back here. Not because we don't want you to be part of us. I'd like to point that out so you don't feel a lack of interest. Rather, because given this whole set of choices, we respect your conscience. We respect it that much that we do not want to pressure your conscience. We've got to, though, use our minds. We can't live on the level of animals and just coast through life. One of the saddest things we so often see in the clergy are people who are ready to retire, or they have retired and their children have left home, and now for the first time they start asking themselves, what is life all about? And they start, in many of their own cases, figuring that they've lived it all wrong. And now they're looking at this, and there's sort of an emptiness. They have almost everything they ever wanted. They have money in the bank. They've paid for a home that they're proud of. They have cars. They have color TV. And they also have an emptiness eating away at them. And this is what causes them to start asking the questions. What do we really live for? What is life for? The one thing I hope we're going to do is look at some of the basic questions. The one thing I hope every one of you will do is start asking yourself, what is life for? And why do I have life, and what am I doing here? Some of these questions I hope in some small ways quickly just to touch down on in an introductory way this evening. But there is a duty, I feel, to ask the questions, and because God gave us our minds and because He trusts these minds, there's a duty to follow what we ourselves conclude. When we look at life itself, there's some problems. There's some real problems from any examination. First, looking out of the world, the first thing I'm aware of is myself. There's me in the world. Heard something very, very fabulous. When you look inside yourself, I just heard this fairly recently, you have a need to be accepted, a need to be loved, a need to end in isolation. That need began the moment, the second you were born. Birth is a sudden thrust out into isolation. Up till that moment, there's the warmth of everything, the way you could describe the baby's life in the womb, and the baby is feeling. There are the brain is registering already, but with birth, all of a sudden, that child is thrown out into a world that is cold and a world where that child's alone. And from that moment on, inside us there are needs to end this isolation, to end the physical and emotional and spiritual coldness and distance and separation and loneliness. Loneliness and aloneness that starts with birth. And as we start going through life with these needs, we start learning certain things. The world doesn't handle our needs as we have them. Our parents, our mother or our fathers can't feed us exactly when we want to be fed. And then also, sometimes the fulfillment of our needs depends upon another person's mood. And there are things that we do that will cause us not to have our needs fulfilled. We get our parents mad, and they take their love away, or they take their food away, and they actually bring pain in our life. And then another great thing that never would have occurred to me, this was part of the same sharing that I heard, one of the great moments of living comes when we go to school, and we learn that much of getting rid of this loneliness depends upon our becoming what others want us to be, not who we are. You just live by your own feelings in school, and you're not going to get very far. You just try to really be yourself in school, and you're not going to pass in many ways. And the people who make it in school are those who buy the whole program of the school. They're the most successful. And so we start learning that if you want to be successful in the world, you can't be yourself. You got to be what others want you to be, what the school tells you you should be, the kind of student that at this particular moment, in this particular school, the feeling is you should be. And it varies from school to school, from time to time. I'm sure today it's far different what a typical student's supposed to be than it was in my day when I went to high school, and then when it was I taught in high school for a while. But here we do have real needs. And I can look out in the world, and how am I going to handle these needs? How am I going to end these inner feelings? And there are lots of things we try. We try to go out and take from the world and handle what we're seeking. Well, first we use material goods. This is probably the biggest thing in America. Our worship of all of our, well, things to handle our pain. If you just try to picture all of the all of the things that a wife couldn't live without today that her grandmother never even dreamt about and went through life without and had peace. But if they broke for a modern woman, if they all broke in the same way, she'd be in hell. And they're specializing more and more and more. Now we have the little hamburgers. Makers, a friend of mine and I were watching television 3 years ago, and they were advertising a machine that just does bacon. And you can just go on and on and on, and they build in a need. If you just get so-and-so, if you get a color TV, that inner emptiness is going to go. If you get a new carpet, that inner emptiness is going to go. If you get a Mr. Mac hamburger maker, that inner emptiness is going to go. Or if you don't have one, you're stuck with that inner emptiness. So if you're those poor who aren't getting this thing, if your husband won't give you the money for it, that eat your heart out, babe, and feel lonely, because happiness comes from having an automatic washer, an automatic dryer, a dishwasher, whatever it is. Happiness comes from things. And I understand, I've made almost any mistake that can ever be made. I am a compulsive buyer if I don't let God to come into my life. So, and I understand why we turn to things to escape loneliness. Basically, because if there's a feeling in here that's unpleasant and I get something new, my attention goes out of the emptiness that's inside me and goes out to the thing that's new. And the novelty distracts me from the emptiness inside. And so we become dependent upon getting new things. And when this new thing wears out, then I need something else to be new to come into my life. And it's just a steady succession of news. Slightly different from this is money. Money is power. And that's what distracts us. Because I've worshipped money too. Put whatever is a lot of money for you, $10, $50, $100, $1,000 in your wallet right now, and your attention won't be on this emptiness inside, on the loneliness, on the isolation of birth and of existence after that. Your attention goes to what you can do with the money. It's power to go places. It's power to dream dreams. It's power to impress people, to buy gifts, to sort of snow them with what you can do for them so they'll like you. So it's power to buy approval. And of course, it's power to buy things. So the money in the wallet is a distraction. But there's never enough money. All you have to do is read the life of Howard Hughes. Time magazine, right before Christmas, did a special feature on the last years of Howard Hughes. And I couldn't finish reading the article. It was that depressive. I don't know if any of the rest of you read part of it. That man was one of the poorest people in the world as far as his inner life and what he had. Anyway, there's never enough, though. You can look at people like this. Other things we use, we can use physical pleasure to distract us from this inner emptiness, and sex is the greatest one. The pleasure distracts from the emptiness inside. If the pleasure is done in marriage, it's just great. It can build the love. But so very, very often, the pleasure is not done. The sexual pleasure doesn't come in the marriage. It comes outside of marriage. And then we start using people as things to handle our own needs. And there's an emptiness that comes. All you got to do again is look at some of the great sex symbols of our century and see the ones who've committed suicide, the ones who become alcoholics, the ones who become addicts. We can use activities. Face in the world. I've done this. You get yourself involved in a lot of good projects, and you got to think your way through. And as long as you got to think of what you're doing, because you're on some committee, you're in some group, your mind has to be on the job you're working on, so your mind isn't left with this emptiness inside. The whole trouble is you can't go without stopping. And yeah, I had to run faster and faster and faster, because I was really running from myself, and all the time I was carrying myself along, and it all kind of blows up on you. A lot of people can look for power. That's power over people. And you can have power over people in small ways. You can get it as a teacher. You can get it as a counselor. You can get it as a foreman. You can get it as an associate, assistant foreman. So a lot of people get rid of their emptiness by knowing that there's somebody beneath them. This isolation ends from, in small ways, at least they try to handle it, from the real feeling that there's somebody beneath them on the whole scale that they can look down on. So they're not the worst. But this doesn't really hack it either. Look at how mad Hitler was. Read the life of Stalin, and you'll see that having power over people won't really handle these inner needs. Fame is pretty much the same. I understand this one. Kind of close to a connection of both of these. You know, the fame is, it's sort of like a dream. This can be some job you get, or something that's going to happen, some marriage you make, I would list all those. You know, it's sort of you getting your dream come true. And your dream, when that happens, then this inner feeling of emptiness is going to end. For me, that's why originally I studied for the priesthood. I grew up in a Polish ghetto in Pennsylvania where the most respected people were the priests. And I was feeling empty, frustrated, and figured, if I become a priest, I'll be happy the way these priests were. Well, if you're frustrated and you become a priest, you become a frustrated priest. And I had to find God later on down the line as the answer to escape all of this. But people will do this. If I get this job, then it's all going to be happy. If only she marries me, then I'll be happy. And, you know, or if I just get this. So fame of some kind or some dream coming true. All these things are ways that the self can look out at the world to try to handle the emptiness. In doing this real quickly, when we look at other people then, they can fit into categories. You can be there as things that I can use to handle my needs. You can be there as enemies threatening me, or you can be there as pretty neutral. So the world has me, and then out here is the world. And part of the world will be people. We'll mention that in a moment. And we're talking about an emptiness, and Jesus himself tells us something that we often forget. The world offers a peace. There is a peace, a way to minimize pain that the world offers each of us. And it's a peace of external order. It's sort of this one that we start learning really from our parents, but that I said in a real major way we start learning in school. Look, you become what we want you to be, and we're going to put the least amount of flack in your life. Well, that's a time word. I understand lots of people today don't know what flack is anymore. I used that with some teenagers and they didn't understand the word. We'll put the least amount of pressure on you. You become what we want you to be, and there isn't going to be much pressure in your life. Things will go the easiest, and you're going to get the biggest and best chance to become what you want. But if you don't become what we want of you, if you don't live by our rules and by our orders, then there's going to be pain coming into your life. So it's an external ordering that the world kind of offers us. If you play the game, if you keep up with the Joneses, if you be what society wants you to be, if you get good, you know, the nice kind of jobs, if you're industrious, if you're an American and you're industrious, that's good. If you're a Mexican and you're industrious, you stand out. They're not going to like it because theirs is a much easier culture. If you're a Mexican and you move to America and you have that mañana spirit, what would be good in Mexico, you're not going to be liked here. Americans don't do that. We have this work culture. So you do what we want you to do. You do what the world, what others tell you to do, and you try to become what others tell you to become. And then you will have the most pleasure externally and the least pain brought into your life. The only thing is, very often, you're not allowed to be who you are. You got to hide your real feelings. And there is a strain. You got to become other than what you really want to be. And there's a tension put in your life, and real peace doesn't come from this. In the world out there, however, there are people that with whom we can relate. People that we really want to love to escape this loneliness. And we can start with our own families and hope that the family is going to have love. Not what I call Gibson bargaining. Where I go down to a store, you know, when I go, Gibson's is just a... The first time this really dawned on me, it's a discount store like Trademark and Kmart. There was one here, there isn't one now, if you're new in the area. If I go to Gibson's and hand a gal $40 and she gives me an electric shaver, that isn't love. And that's what most people call the type of love they take to their marriage. I will do something for him if he does something for me. I will do more for her if. And it's really, it's a bargaining. I pay you so much, so you pay me so much. But that's one way to relate. And it can make for a lot of compromise and bring some happiness into life. But there are other and deeper ways. We can try to escape the selfishness and the isolation by really caring for others and by really bringing them into our lives. We'll do it with a pretty limited number. Sometimes we can try in a small way to expand and to bring in more and more of the world, opening up maybe to include the whole family of mankind. So using our minds, there's self with needs, there's the world out there to help handle those needs, including other people who have to be related with, and then there's God. Now the one thing I got to say that you'll be surprised with, I should have said it at the beginning, I'm not going to make any effort ever to prove certain things. I'm not going to prove that there is a God. I'm not going to prove that God spoke to Abraham. I'm not going to try to prove at all that Jesus is God. In case this shocks you, and it probably does, the Bible correctly read doesn't either, ever, anywhere. The Bible presents God, and you either accept in faith or you can't. You see, if I can prove something, then you can't have faith.